Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
The disorder in the salt water continues. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of November 4th and 5th. Man, it is mayhem. The bites are going on still. Hey, oh, and also, the sea bass limit went to 15 as of November 1st. Speaking of sea bass, shout out to Johnny Machia. Yo, Egg Harbor Township. How's that Wildwood sea bass trip, little brother? Quesadich. How'd you do, man? You know where to find me one day a week. Stop in. Let me see your results there. But you have the sea bass biker on the porgies. Every party boat captain I've spoken with, even some of the charter guys, Tom P., haven't seen scup, a.k.a. porgy fishing like this, in decades. It's incredible. And they're getting sizes. I'm seeing fish 3 to 4 pounds that you would normally get on the long-range trips, like on the Big Jamaica. You're going to 50 to 80-mile wrecks to Paramount. In close, 120 feet of water, 130 feet of water, 80 feet of water, 75 feet. They're getting some slab porgies and big knucklehead sea bass. Hint, man. More than a dozen, but fewer than 50 captains have told me, and patrons, the bigger sea bass now are being caught on a green crab. Some guys even using white leggers, not the clam. Jigs have been a zero. So that's a little bit of an oddity. And just remember, with the Life Preserver dealio now, as per the state, no owner or operator of a recreational vessel less than 26 feet, including rowboats, canoes, kayaks, stand-up paddleboards, shall permit its operation between November 1st and May 1st unless each person on board such vessel is wearing a securely fastened United States Coast Guard-approved wearable personal flotation device of an appropriate size while such vessel is underway. And I spoke to some marine conservation officers, marine police, state police. They are going to be enforcing this big time. Some people are bitching and moaning about it, but I can see, especially late November, you get into December, the young kids, you know, when you're young, you're immortal. The duck hunter, you see the kids back there and they're you know, little sneak boxes and stuff. It's, I'm not one for old regulations, although you know that. But this seems to make sense. Hey, I have a really jam show coming up. We're talking with Nate Figley, Southern District Lands Management Superintendent in charge of the pheasant and quail stocking in a Rack of Fin Radio listening area. Talk about all about it. And he lays down the gauntlet for those who say, they didn't stock the birds. They didn't put any birds out. Hoo-hoo-hoo. Good luck today to all the youngsters out there. Youth Pheasant Day is happening today on select wildlife management areas, north, central, and south. Guided hunts. Now for the past month and a half, I've been telling you to pre-register for this. So, hey, you snooze, you lose. However, 1 o'clock today, these management areas will be open to hunting. Now, besides today, the youth get to hunt this coming week. So it's a really, really a bonus program. Up north, it's going to open up at 1 p.m. is Whittingham, Black River, Clinton. In the Rack and Fin Radio area, Assunpink, Colliers Mills, Millville, Peasley, Winslow. All day today is Flatbrook and Glassboro. So these birds are stocked. Division of Fish and Wildlife DEP's Fish and Wildlife put out hundreds upon hundreds of top quality pheasants. Now, open all day, November 6th through 10th. Up north, it's going to be Whittingham, Black River, Flatbrook, and Clinton. In the Rack of Fin Radio listening area, Assunpink, Colliers Mills, Glassboro, Millville, Peasley, and Winslow. And also, don't forget today, semi-wild preserves. The youngsters can hunt. If you belong to a club, you have a youngster that wants to hunt, let's get it done. But I always hear questions about the stock. Tom Peters, pheasant quail stock. Not so much on the bobs, but on the pheasants. You know, what's involved? I know they're supposed to be stocking birds. I'm paying $40 for a bird stamp. You know, pheasant quail stamp. I'm not seeing any birds or not. It is, birds, trust me, are going. I want to put an end to this right now. A very special guest on the line right now is, when he sleeps. Between the family and the hunting and fishing, God bless him, he gets his work done. It is Nate Figley. He is Superintendent, Southern Region Lands Management. His crew is responsible for stocking birds on the WAMAs, Wildlife Management Areas, in Southern New Jersey. And by the way, there's 23 WAMAs statewide. Also, the Delaware Water Gap gets stocked, and also a few times during this upcoming November. I think it goes into December, too. Fort Dix gets a few birds. And that's by permit only. Nate Phillies joining us on the line right now. Nathan, thanks for joining us. It's time, man. Next week, the season opens. It is going to be prime time. Some beautiful ring they set to go out. Oh, some beautiful bobs, too. Correctamundo.
Yep. Yeah, it's correct. Yep. Definitely excited for it.
They were looking at a total, preliminary total here, people, of 57,480 ring necks and 11,000 bob white quail. Now, the bobs go on the Greenwood and Peasley Wildlife Management areas in, you know, central South Jersey. But these pheasants are stocked statewide. And, Nate, just the logistics behind this, I want to get into a little bit of the history, too. Listen, I remember when pheasant stamps were $5. In fact, when they first, people were like, their asses were in here, $5, right? Because it used to be free. There used to be two game farms, Rockport and one in Forked River. And they've gone by the wayside. Now, the birds are obtained from private vendors, correct, Nate?
That is correct, yeah. We currently use two different vendors, both located in Pennsylvania.
And Nate, I've seen these birds. They are just super quality. It used to be the ringnecks especially were called the Rockport Rockets, big, meaty birds, fast flyers. And for whatever reason, there's things like avian, I guess whatever, but they bred a brand new facility, what, about 8, 9, 10 years ago. They eventually had to close it down. So, but Nate, from what I understand, getting birds from the private vendors is actually a little less expensive than growing them at Rockport, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And it's also a lot easier on our land management staff as far as their time goes. Previously, when we were raising the birds, our staff would have to go up to the game farm, help capture the birds the morning of, get them in crates, and then bring them all the way back to whatever region, you know, they would be stocking that day. And for the Southern Region staff, that's about a 2.5 hour ride each way to get to Rockport. So saves us a lot of time because the vendors we use now bring them directly to the regional offices that we stock out of.
A lot of time, listeners, and a lot of manpower. And there's only one thing funnier, especially in the early morning, chasing these ringnecks around is watching Tom P. running across a meadow with a net trying to get fiddler crabs. Nate, that should be on TV somewhere. Maybe a YouTube thing. But listen, let's go over some numbers right now real fast, and we'll get back to Nate. For next Saturday and next the following Tuesday and Thursday, the birds are stocked for Saturday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Assinpink, 540, 320, and 320. Kyers Mills, 330, 200, and 200. Howardsville, sorry about that skipping Scotty McGahee from years ago, but hey, man, that's a great little spot, 80, 50, and 50. Manahawk, insane. Manasquan, 190, 110, 110. Medford, that's a sleeper, people, at Medford Track, 140, 80, and 80. Stafford Forge, The Forge, 270, 160, and 160. Now, in the Southlands, Dix Wham is going to get 210, 130, 130. Heiserville, 80, 50, and 50. Mad Horse, love that place, man. You go, boy, you go during the summer, the bugs will carry you away. 150, 90, and 90. Millville, big track. Gets the most birds, stay white. 573, 43, 40. Nantucket, 190, 110, 110. Port Republic, 80, 50, and 50. Tuckahoe, 180, 110, 110. And Winslow, 230, 140, and 140. Hey, Figley, that's a lot of friggin' birds that first week, man. This is going to be crazy. Oh, yeah, and also, let's talk to Bob Whites here. It's going to be 600 each on Peasley and Greenwood for the 11th. On the 14th and 16th, they'll be getting 280 and 260, respectively. Again, Nate, besides the ringnecks, you guys also handle the bobs, correct?
That is correct, yep.
That's a lot of birds, man. That's a lot of driving around, and I've seen some of these tracks. I've been on quite a few stocking exercises. Man, you guys go in some dangerous territory, man. I mean, some pits and mudslides and holes, man. That's nuts.
Yeah, it's it takes quite a bit of effort to get all those birds out there on, you know, three nights a week. So takes up a lot of staff time. They do a great job at it, and they do that all basically in the dark. You know, once the sun goes down, that's when they leave our shop, and then they head out to the whatever wildlife management area they're responsible for to stock the birds that night.
They wasn't until a few years ago. Wasn't stocking done in the late afternoons, if memory serves me correctly?
It's as far as stocking at night, that's been going on ever since I've been around. And,
okay.
You know, I've been in with Fish and Wildlife for a little over 19 years now.
Yeah, so it's, when I saw him stock, it was probably just, you know, getting towards dusk. So the birds were getting out. And, Nate, you hear about people saying, well, you know, I'm not seeing any birds. They didn't stock. And you say to yourself, you know they stock. The birds are out there. Before we get to that, Nate, again, the logistics involved, timing is everything. So you're talking a long day from when the birds are in till they're finally stocked, correct?
I may have missed that question, Tom. Can you hear me?
Hold on a second. Yeah, there we go. There we had a little glitch right there. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I missed that last question. For some reason, my phone might have cut out. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's my board here. My big bony elbows are hitting stuff. No, I mean, the logistics involved, I mean, it's a tight schedule. I mean, now, any mishaps can happen. Are there instances, for example, where there's a delay getting the birds out?
Yeah, and that's one of our biggest concerns, and that's why we stock, you know, just after sunset.
Mm-hmm.
If we waited to do that till later in the evening or, you know, a few hours before legal hunting time, you know, whether you get a flat tire, some of these areas we're driving into are wet, and after, you know, if you throw weather into it, you know, you have wet field conditions. If you get a truck stuck,
yep,
that area is not getting stocked until somebody from another area can come and either pull somebody out of, you know, a hole they got stuck in, help fix a flat tire. So that's why, you know, we stock right after sunset so that it gives us some leeway. Mm-hmm. If there is an issue along the way, we can get staff over there to help out and then eventually get those birds out. And if we waited to do that until the morning, there's a good possibility we wouldn't get those out in time before legal hunting time.
Time, right. Joins on the line is Nate Figley. Topic is the pheasant quail stocking. It's going to get underway this coming next Saturday. Rather, is the opening of the season is going to extend right through December 30th, the day before New Year's Eve. 57,480 ringnecks and 11,000 bobwhites. Now, the bobs were just released on Greenwood and Peasley. Nate, one thing I have to ask you. Weather, okay, again, it's this term, weather event. You have an impending snowstorm coming, and we've seen snowstorms in late November, early December. What happens when the birds cannot be stocked that particular day? Are they stocked on an off day or saved for the next week or the next stocking day? What's the dealio?
We've always gotten them out, Tom.
Wow, that is amazing.
There's been days where, you know, you're driving your truck down one of our Whamma roads, and it looks like you're driving a boat and not a truck with the snow parting, you know, off to each side of the vehicle. So we do get them out. The quail, what we will do with bad weather, if it's going to be really cold overnight, at times we will stock those in just prior to legal hunting time. And the mm-hmm. reason for that is they're not as hardy. So if they get wet and then they get cold, there's a good chance they're going to die. So sometimes we will hold on to those birds until the morning, and then we can also bring additional staff in to help out so we know we're not going to run into problems and be late getting those birds out.
Again, the stocking of the ringnecks and the bobs. I mean, the ringnecks, you just open the crates and out they go. The bobs, do you hand place? Because, again, quail, a whole different ballgame with a covey thing going on. Well, what happens on either stocking, respectively?
So what we do is we try and spread them out as best as possible. And, you know, depending upon the areas that are stocked and the type of cover, some birds, you know, if you're in a 20 or 30 acre field, they'll fly some of those birds in. They don't just open the crate and push them out. And then in smaller fields, we'll basically hand plant the birds as we go along. With quail, we do try and spread the birds out as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But again, quail, you know, depending upon the weather, we stock them in little bunches.
I was going to say, right, yeah.
As the weather gets colder, those bunches have to get a little bit larger so that they can stay together and, you know, keep their body temperatures up so they don't freeze at night.
Listen, it's going to be, I'm just, Figley, I'm so fired up for next Saturday, man. I'm bouncing off the walls here in the studio. Thank God they have soundproofing on the walls. I'd be banging up a storm. Nate, hang in for another segment. Nate Figley, Superintendent, Southern Lands Management. We're talking the stocking of pheasants and quail. It's going to get underway for next Saturday's opener. It's going to extend through December 30th. So grab that cup, grab that rebel. Be right back with Nate Figley.
WPG Talk Radio, 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station. Fox on Tech.
Remember when you used your watch to count seconds when taking your own pulse? Wearable tech continues to make the wristwatch a key tool for managing your personal health. Watches or devices worn on the wrist can read and track your pulse and even your oxygen saturation, which shows how well you're breathing. Even Apple impressed the medical world when debuting a single lead EKG using the Apple Watch. It can't tell if you've had a heart attack, but it can help manage certain chronic cardiac conditions like atrial fibrillation or AFib. Now, according to Bloomberg, the next Apple Watch will go further in that it will be able to read blood pressure. Apple is reportedly building a new sensor for this key health diagnostic, usually requiring an inflated cuff on the upper arm. Reliable wrist-worn BP measurements could be a game-changer for managing heart disease. With Fox on Tech, I'm Eben Brown, Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go, the gap below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of November 4th and 5th. We're talking pheasants and we're talking bobwhites. Nate Figley, Superintendent Lands Management, Fish and Wildlife, and the stocking of ringnecks and pheasants that gets underway for next Saturday and goes through December 30th. On 23 WAMA statewide, wildlife management areas, and also that very expansive. If you ever want to do a road trip and you have good dogs, you need good dogs up there, especially because it's so big, the Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area up there in parts of Warren and Somerset County, and Sussex Counties, rather. But down here, we have in the Rackfin Radio listening area, we have Assunpink, Colliers Mills, Howardsville, Manahawk, and Manasquan, Medford, Stafford, Forge, the Forge, our home area. You have Dix, not Fort Dix. Fort Dix gets stocked a few times. Dix is another good tract. Glassboro, Heiserville, Madhorse, Millville, and Nantucket, Port Republic, Tuckahoe, and Winslow. A lot of pheasants going out there, and we have Peasley and Greenwood for the bobwhites. Well, Nate, question, lands management. Now, we have all these quality birds going out. You hear the complaints now and then. They didn't put enough out, or they didn't put them out here, there, whatever. But I want to concentrate this segment, we only have a few minutes, on the habitat itself. Now, the formula was changed, the stocking formula was changed a few years ago based on stamp sales, bird stamps. And by the way, lovely Dee Marie, I have your pheasant and quail stamp. I got it. I just didn't tell you. It's going to be a little bit of a birthday present. But getting the habitat itself, fields, it's based on the number of fields. Besides the construction of the fields, are there any specific things planted, back in the day it was less bidets and things like that, for the birds where they can actually, hold over, feed, and, whatever?
So our typical plantings in our pheasant stocked areas would either be warm season grasses, which provide excellent cover, and also dwarf sorghum and buckwheat. Mm-hmm. The buckwheat won't be too apparent this time of year, but the dwarf sorghum is. And a lot of people, when they're out there, they believe it's, like corn stubble. That's right. Kind of what it looks like as you're going through the field. But it gets a seed head on the top of it. And it's really good, not just for the upland birds that we stock, but also, turkeys and all the other passerine birds that frequent the field areas.
Like the warm season grasses. Now, every once in a while, I'll be flying down the parkway, and I'll be going by the forge, for example, and there's usually a burn, in the spring? And is that the stuff that grows back, that lush green stuff that gets pretty high?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
And that is excellent cover, man. Those birds can really get down there and hide in that. But edge cover, Nate, are there any projects or creating edge cover or something for the birds, especially the bobs? They like where cover collides.
Yeah, correct. And that's what we try to do along some of our field edges. We try and keep that early successional growth. So more like shrubby type species or lower growing trees that have a pretty high stem density. And basically what that means is they're growing close together, which
right.
provides, you know, again, excellent cover and a good place for those to, when you're hunting them, to get those birds hung up in that where your dogs can actually catch up to them and the hunters can too. Because one of the things that pheasants really like to do is they like to run. They're extremely fast. And if you ever get one out, like on an open road, on one of the open trails, if you ever see one, they're a lot faster than I am. I can't keep up with them. So, you know, you need to push them towards that type of cover so it slows them down a little bit and gives your dog enough time to catch up.
Nate, the succession of cover, is it a year-by-year thing, or we planted this field, crew, everything, so this is going to be good for X number of years, or is it like every September, every May, every June, whatever, you're back out there? Because I go by some tracks, Nate, it seems that year-to-year, things are dug up and plowed and replanted.
Yeah, there's typically a rotation, and that would be on anywhere between 2 and 4 years, where you'll let a field go fallow and just let the native grasses grow up, just to keep nutrients in the soil. If you plant something year after year after year, you're going to burn the nutrients up in the field. So we do let them go fallow for a few years, which still provides excellent cover. But then, you know, somewhere between the 2 to 4 year period, we'll get back in there. And one of the reasons we're doing that is to keep the woody stem vegetation out of the fields
right.
from taking over. And in South Jersey, you're going to see a lot of sweet gum. Grows at an incredible rate, and fields get taken over pretty quickly by that if you're not maintaining it on a routine basis.
Okay, now, so we have the habitat, we have the birds. There's always, you know, the plantings for, and it benefits all wildlife. See, your $40 pheasant and quail stamp, to me, it's a deal and a half. You want to go to a private preserve, that's fine. But you look at your receipt at the end of the day, and man, and if you hear it to me, especially on the public lands, people pick your times. We like to hunt on a Tuesday and Thursday, always late morning, early afternoon. Saturdays, we wait until late afternoon. We have maybe an hour of legal shooting time left, hour and a half. Yes, it's worth it. You pick a wildlife management area that you know, although we like to explore. Like I'm wanting to get down back to that mad horse. I want to get back down to Nantuxent and Dixon, Glassboro. But the quality hunting is there. Again, if you pick your times, you have the services of a good dog. We like to bust the brush. Sometimes you come out of your car, look like you went through a meat grinder. But there's always pheasants. There's always quail around. Again, one more time, pick your place. Yet there are the naysayers. I see it all the time, and they just... And not that I'm some shill for fish and wildlife. Oh, yeah, I work. Okay, full disclosure, I worked there about 100,000 years ago in the fisheries end of things. But yeah, we help stock pheasants and stuff. The birds go out. I've been on many a stocking venture. Again, permission through the press office, all that. The birds go out. And I hear these on occasion, not often, on occasion. God damn, they didn't put any birds. They ain't stock here. They're supposed to stock here. Every field's supposed to get hit. Blah, 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 blah. It's hunting. It's out here. Here's a bird. So I just want to address this with Figley right now, because I'm sure they hear the complaints. Nate, not to pontificate there, because once I start yapping, you know me. It's the Italian side of me. But, Nate, how, in lack of a better term, how do you field these complaints? It has to be exasperating for you, because your crew's out there. I've seen them out there, people. What do you do?
So, like you mentioned, they are out there. We're getting the birds out there, and we do get, you know, quite a few complaints on it. And this is something I could talk on, you know, for hours about, to describe, you know, the possibilities of why people aren't seeing birds. I can tell you when I first started hunting pheasants, I was doing so, you know, without a dog. I was, you know, beating the brush, I guess is what
yeah,
we typically refer to it as.
Yeah.
Typically with a few other people.
Yep.
And our success rate wasn't great. We'd get some birds every now and then. And there'd be a lot of days where, you know, we'd come home with nothing. But then I got a dog. He's pretty well trained, and my success rate increased. And even saying that, there's days I go out and we don't see any birds at all. You know, it happens. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, these birds love to run. That's their first defense. I'm running to get away from whatever is chasing me. And if you don't have good cover to hold those birds up to give not only the dog but also the hunter time to catch up to them, they're just going to keep right on running. So, you know, that's another issue you contend with. But, you know, we still get complaints about it. And one of the ways that I deal with those complaints is, you know, I invite those people to register as a Wildlife Conservation Corps volunteer. There's an application that I will email to them. They can fill it out. Once they're registered, they can go out with one of our staff and actually stalk the birds and see how it's done.
And there you go.
So then they realize, you know, the process, and they get to see those birds going out.
Okay, how's that? The gauntlet's been, yeah, there you go. The gauntlet's laid down, people. You want to bitch and moan. Ain't no birds. They didn't stock it. Here's your opportunity. Register for Wildlife Conservation Volunteer. Figley will send you, email you the application, and be a part of it. Don't just sit there and bitch and moan, although, you know, it's some people, that's their thing. Well, Nate, too, one thing we do have to address, though, is especially is the predation factor. I'm saying a big percentage, but a fair percentage of birds do get hit between the red tails, the owls, I guess, and the foxes. That's just the attrition rate. That's nature, man.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, that's always going to happen. And every night, you know, you're out stalking is different. Some nights you're going to have a bright full moon and the birds tend to go towards it. And in my experience stalking, when you have those full moon nights, you need to get the birds down in the cover as quickly as possible. Every now and then, you know, one will get out of your hands and start flying. And when there's a full moon, you'll just see them keep flying right at it. And I don't know how far those birds go, but typically when they were doing the pheasant allocation formula, what they determined is that birds on an initial flush will typically go about 900 feet before they'll land again. So, you know, they could be going somewhere in that realm of about 900 feet before they you know, sit down when there's that full moon.
Well, let me tell you something.
Yeah. The cloudy, rainy nights where those birds seem to hold and stick real tight in the fields.
Yeah. Another thing, too, one thing, those, especially the cockbirds, hens not so much. The cockbirds, Figley, they land, and man, they got the track shoes on. They run, they keep running a little bit. People think they stop, and they land right, and they stop. Now, we've seen both. We've watched them. Hey, here they come. Look at that. You know, like the bird flew the gauntlet. Got shot out of it, lands and stays right there. Or many a time they see a bird land and they hit and look around quick and choo, off they go to the nearest clump of cover. So they do move, yeah. besides wing it. Well, this is $40 pheasant and quail stamp. You have the numbers there. Go to the digest. They're on the stocking numbers are on page 55. We have a total for the season, 57,480 ringnecks going out and 11,000 bobwhites. The schedule's there. Nate, as the season winds down, the stocking becomes intermittent. But the bird now, as again, we want to touch on the weather thing now. God forbid an ice storm. The especially the bobs, because they're so susceptible. Do they go out?
Any day that's marked as a, you know, a stock day, those birds are being put out. Yep, they get out there.
And there you go.
They make it happen.
They make it happen. Again, any complaints, you want to be a part of it, njfishandwildlife.com. Nate Figley, do you want to give your contact, please?
Sure. It's Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, dot Figley, F-I-G-L-E-Y, at D-E-P, dot N-J, dot G-O-V, or you can get me at 609-508-3973.
Okay, there you go. Any complaints about the birds not getting out, you want to be a part of it to see for yourself, this is a first on Rack and Fin Radio. It is there. Put up or shut up, people. Be right back, Rack and Fin Radio. Figley, I'll see you in the field, man. Hey, how's that lab? Is he asking for me? Hey, when we hunting with Tom P? We'll see you later, man.
Thanks, Tom.
I think it's a great program. Again, you have to pick your days. Oh, sometimes it gets, I'll say right here, am I going to get in trouble with this? People, it gets psycho out there. You have to be really careful. That's why I pick your times. That one, gosh, not to bring up a bad part of history, but there have been times I feel, it sounds like the Siege of Corregidor. I wasn't there, but I had relatives way back when, uncles that told me about it. Crazy, crazy. Explore the areas. The birds move. Like, hey, Tom P, there's no trade. They didn't stock. Trout have fins. They move. Muskies have fins. They move. Pheasants and quail have feet. They run. They move. Get out and explore. There's plenty of birds out there. Philly laid down the challenge for those naysayers. So be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
So what is Talk with a Purpose? It's a lively, informative, number one rated talk show on Saturday morning. Hi, this is John DeMasi. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 9 a.m. till noon for Talk with a Purpose, heard right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5. And if you miss it on Saturday, we replay it on Sunday from 5 until 8 p.m. Don't miss Talk with a Purpose, Saturday and Sunday, right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
News. I'm Carmen Roberts. Secretary of State Blinken is meeting with Arab leaders in Amman, Jordan this morning as the fighting rages on in Gaza.
Blinken laid out several key goals that the U.S. hopes to see, and that includes preventing the conflict from spilling out to other neighboring nations, making sure that civilians in Gaza have access to aid.
Fox's Alex Hogan in Jerusalem. America's dealing with another mass shooting, this time in Cincinnati, where five people were wounded and one killed last night.
This is happening too often. People are reverting to gun violence rather than resolving disputes in a humane manner.
Chief Teresa Thigi says police don't know who opened fire or why. And in Nepal, the death toll from a 5.6 magnitude earthquake jumps to 137. Reuters reports it's the country's worst earthquake in 8 years. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Atlantic City Electric AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey today. We'll have a pleasant mix of clouds and sunshine with a high 65. It'll be mostly cloudy tonight. Remember to set the clocks back. We're going down to 35. Tomorrow, another nice day, partly sunny with a high 67. Then partly sunny still on Monday, pleasant with a high 62. Plan with confidence. Visit AccuWeather.com. I'm AccuWeather's Rose Tamburino on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
That was Nate Figley talking to pheasant quail stocking. Hey, next week, another world-class event is coming back to New Jersey. 32nd Annual International Fly Tying Symposium. 32 years. I cannot believe it, because I remember the very first one. Yes, I'm older than dirt, and I taught Peter how to use a cast net, just so you know about that. Joining us on the line right now is the promoter, owner, head muckety-muck of the International Fly Tying Symposium, a longtime friend of Tom P. and Rack and Fin Radio. It is Chuck Ferimsky, but it's going to be right up there. It's back at the Doubletree Hilton up there in Somerset, right off 287, 440. Easy peasy ride. If you're into the fly fishing, you're into the fly tying, over 100 tires around the world, people. You got people coming from Belgium, Holland, everywhere. This is going to be some event. Now, I don't tie. I personally don't have the patience for it. I don't have the hand-eye coordination for it. I prefer to buy my flies. But you go there, you see these creations. Some are so exquisite, really, they belong in a shadow box. But the meat of it, fresh and salt water, how to catch more fish with these flies. There's seminars, there's classes, the whole nine yards. Chuck Ferimsky, how you doing? Congrats on 32 years, big brother.
Yeah, man, I must be old.
I know, man. We're pretty much right there. By the way, this is the man I met at Wood Advertising. Shout out to Dick Wood, Jack Neal there. 403 22nd Street, Asbury Avenue in Ocean City. When I said, Jack, I saw this guy, man, fly fishing. He landed a flounder with a fly rod. He said, yeah, it's probably so-and-so. I didn't pay attention to it. 2 days later, I said, I just, in the agency, I said, did I just see you catch a flounder the other day with a fly rod? It was Chuck Ferimsky. And Chuck, then you had the fly show, the symposium. You're really kicking ass on the fly world of things, bro.
Yeah, I've been doing it a long time. It started out small, and now it's all over the country. My son took over 5 years ago.
Right.
I was nice enough to give him the whole show right before the pandemic hit, so he wouldn't be able to make any money for 2 years.
That's vintage for Remsky. Well, Chuck, let's get to the symposium itself. 32 years. They have guys from around the world. You have some great U.S. tires. Camisa, those guys. You got the guy coming, the big head cheese from Orvis coming in. The brainstorm behind this, what made you think, honest to God, for Remsky, I know how your mind works, that there would be a market for a fly tying symposium, and there would be an audience for a fly tying symposium. What made you think about that?
Well, when I first started any show, it wasn't a tying symposium. It was only part of a show. It was called the Fly Fisher Symposium, and it was at Seven Springs Mountain Resort, where I had my two shops at the ski resort.
Right, and in PA. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, the owner says, hey, I have a weekend at the ballroom open. Why don't you do something in there? I'll give you the ballroom. Just give me a bunch of people that will rent rooms and drink a lot of beer and eat a lot of food. So I started this Fly Fisher Symposium. We had shops. We built a beautiful pond. I had the landscaper build a pond for me. And at the end of the show, no one would leave the tying tables. It was like, come on, we want to close. No one wanted to leave. And we said, this is the most popular part of the show besides all the casting that everybody wants to do, testing the rods. So a couple of the guys got together. This was in April we did the show. And he said, why don't we do just a fly tying event in the fall before the winter when people could tie flies and learn everything, and then they'll be ready for the spring. So that's what we did, and we called it the Fly Tying Symposium. And that's how it started.
And Chuck, how long before you got the international, like Theo, the guy from the Netherlands, the beadhead, Theo, congrats on that. He, for lack of a better, created, invented, what do you call it? When you had the international tires contact you to come over, how many years into it, or were they right there from the get-go?
Well, it was probably 1 or 2 years after I started, because the word got out. It just travels fast with the fly tires, because they're always on social media, they communicate. And at that time, now, you know, the flights that come over from Europe were cheap compared to what it costs now. So
right.
I remember we had themes. We had all the guys come from Sweden 1 year?
Yeah, I remember that. Yep.
We called the theme was How Sweet It Is. And we had the Canadian theme 1 year, and then we had the theme from the Netherlands when 16 tires came from the Netherlands. And that's when Theo came.
Right.
They brought a whole bunch on the plane, and it was fantastic. But we have, maybe six countries represented this year. Italy, Belgium, Holland, England.
Hey, is Puglisi going to be there? Enrico?
I don't know. I think his son's going to come and visit, because his son took over the business.
There you go.
And Enrico spends a lot of time fishing in Mexico. He likes to go for the saltwater fishing.
I know he does.
He
likes the rooster stuff, the rooster fish. Now, listen, people, we have a world-class celebrity in the fly fishing world, Jersey's own Bob Popovics. We actually call him Bobby Popovics. Fly tying inventor. He's on a pro staff of rod companies, line companies, reel companies, and just all his celebrity. He is just a basic guy who really, Chuck, isn't that weird? He loves his roses. He has a restaurant up there in Bayville in Ocean County called the Shady Rest that he visits on occasion as other people are running it. But he tends, where's Bobby? I stopped in for a pizza. Where's Bobby? He's out there in his rose garden. But he is, I understand, Ferimsky, that Bobby's going to be at the symposium?
Yeah, he's always busy at the restaurant. He doesn't come all the time. He tries to pick the shows when he has the time. And the reason he definitely wants to come to the tying symposium, because they're introducing a hook that he designed, and they're made specifically for the big flies that he ties. I'm not going to give you the name of the hook, because they're going to introduce it at the tying symposium.
Fair enough.
They'll have samples for everybody. Bobby will be there sitting next to another guy that's pretty wild and famous in fly tying, Bob Clouser. He's flying up the
Clouser. Oh, my God.
He'll be there with Bobby. There'll be real characters. All their buddies will be coming to the show. It'll be jammed at their table. You'll probably have to squeeze in between people to talk.
That is a 1-2 punch. Listen, it's a 30-second International Fly Tying Symposium. It's going to be a favorite location at 200 HM Drive, Somerset, New Jersey, the Double Tree. Okay, let's see. Cash admission is adults. Saturdays, $18. Sunday, $15. Weekend pass, $28. That's a dealio. Youngsters under 16, free. Active military with ID, $10. Now, for Rimsky, I understand there's you have seminars, you have fly tying classes, everything. So people sign up for that. When they get there, that's all included in the price. What's the dealio?
Everything's included in the price except the private special classes, and we have 3 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon, and some of them still have some openings. Tom Rosenbauer is teaching a class. We have Barry Ord Clark coming from Norway, who was Fly Tire of the Year last year, I think. Tim Flagler, who was Fly Tire of the Year for Fly Tire Magazine, he's teaching a class. We have a special class on saltwater flies.
You have to
pay for it. You can get that on our website. If you look at the International Fly Tying Symposium website, the entire brochure and everything that you can go to is listed on there. The seminars are part of your ticket price. All the featured tire demonstrations that have a big screen, and they'll be set up with chairs. They'll be real comfortable. Everything is included except the private classes, but you can sign up for those. The room at the show to get in at the last minute.
Doug, listen, we're up against a hard break. One question I have to ask you, have you noticed, I have, over the past few years, it was hot, then not, came up a little bit, went down a little bit. Do you notice an increase in the interest, especially with the striper run going on, people, Mary Mother of God, the interest in saltwater fly fishing? It seems that's starting to grow a little bit. What are you seeing?
Well, when you see a blitz on the beach, and half the people are fishing with fly rods, you're going, what in the world was that long stick that guy's holding? They're getting into it because the saltwater rods and reels and lines have improved so much.
Drastic improvements.
And the guys that are tying the fly, we're tying flies that are 10 inches long for the bunker to match.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about matching the hatch. You know, a big fly used to be a 3-inch clouser. You know, now
right.
You get articulated flies with 4 sections that look like they have batteries in them. They're swimming along. You can't tell the difference between the live bait and the fly anymore.
This is true. Listen, saltwater, especially if you want to get into the saltwater fly fishing end of things, the International Fly Tying Symposium, we're going to have the fly show later on, but this, you'll see the masters at their craft. There's classes there. You can sign up for classes. There's seminars, the whole thing. The 32nd International Fly Tying Symposium is going to be the Doubletree by Hilton Somerset Hotel at 200 HM Drive up there in Somerset. Easy to reach. Any point to 287 Main Highways, it goes right, boom.
Free parking.
Right there.
Big
thing, free parking as well. Chuck, internationalflytyingsymposium.com, correct?
Yep, that's it.
Hey, Chuck, maybe in between our chasing pheasants and stuff, we may see you there. You'll hear me coming for Rimsky. You take care, man.
Prices are going to go up when I see you.
Hey, he's killing me, people. He's killing me. Chuck, we'll see you, man.
I always do that.
Good luck.
All right,
take care.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, it's a hell of an event. I prefer to purchase my flies. Like I said, I don't have the hand-eye coordination, the wrap, the thing, the whip finishers, the devices. Forget it. I buy it, but check it out. Be right back to wrap it up, Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio, 95.5 FM and 1450 AM, South Jersey's talk station. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio, 95.5.
Wrapping up the weekend, November 4th and 5th, Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Huge event next weekend, too. Another one. Man, they just keep coming. November is a month that keeps giving. It's the inaugural Battle of the Back Bay Striper Tournament. $10,000. $10,000 first prize. Join us on the line right now. He's on the water. But we got him here because he's got a short notice just to give us the finer points of what's happening because there are still some spots open to participate. It's Captain Dave, the Rave Showalter, Absecon Bay Sports Center, 81 Natalie Terrace, and Absecon. Captain Dave, Battle of the Back Bay Striper Tournament. You still have room. What's the dealio?
We got some, but it's getting tight. And I'll tell you what, we're looking on the long range weather. We're looking great. Everything's gone. This is the Battle of the Back Bay Striped Bass Tournament. It's a catch, video, measure, and release. And so no fish will be harmed in the winning of this $10,000.
Cap, go into the finer points outside. I understand it's a weekend event, the 11th and the 12th. Fishing on the 12th. What's going on the 11th?
On the 11th, well, we're going to have a captain's meeting at the Absecon American Legion in the afternoon. Starting at 12:00 in the afternoon, but we're going to make a lunch out of it. And since it is Veterans Day, we're offering any veterans that are in the area, any veterans, you know, that especially if they're participating, are all going to get a free lunch. And
good deal.
And all of the captains and crews will get a lunch there too. So that in itself is going to be an event. But the big show is the next day. We're taking off out of Absecon Creek, right at the Absecon Ponce Landing Road boat ramp. We're going to meet there early in the morning. There will be box checks. There will be boat checks. There's going to be lifeguard checks. They just threw a new rule into the mix. So when you leave here, you're going to have to wear a life jacket. Anytime you're on the water, you're going to have a life jacket.
Yep.
And when you come back, driving back in to check back in, you're going to have a life jacket. That's part of the rules. Yeah, but it wasn't our rules. State of New Jersey's rules.
It came out a few weeks ago, but they've said in the opening, they're going to be enforcing that big time. They're not messing around with this. So, Dave, let's get into this $10,000. Well, like a few minutes left. $10,000 first prize, $2,000 second, $1,000 third. Go.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. You just said it. We're going to be on the water. We're going to leave right at first light, probably right about 7:00. It's basically a bimini start, but yeah, be a little careful. The tide should be just about high in the morning when we leave. You know, it's gonna be a good day on the water. The fishing already is fantastic. I expect it to be a whole lot better. And then it comes in a couple of little tricks. You're gonna catch a fish, get him on the line. While he's on the line, you have to start videoing. While he's in the water, while you're fighting, and you're going to show a picture, you're going to show the actual angler fighting the fish. You'll get it in a net, or you'll lift it in. However you're going to get it in, you get it, and very safely, you're going to show that it has a circle hook in its mouth if it's bait, if it's on a jig or whatever. You're going to show what's in its mouth.
Okay.
And then you're going to go on to, well, everybody's going to have the same tsunami rulers on the boat. So you're going to lay it on a ruler, nose to the stop and tail, and where the tail squeezes to, that's the length. You're going to have to take enough time to see the length, enough time to see everybody, and then you're going to show a live release. And this day, everybody is going to release them. Now, the important thing is when you got that fish, you measure it. You say, I got a 29-inch fish here. You have to decide, because you can weigh one fish a day. You have to decide, am I going to claim this fish, or am I going to say, no, I'm not taking this fish. We're just going to release it and catch another one. But if you do say, yes, I claim this fish, this is our tournament fish, you have to get the picture, and then from all of the photos, and then you have 1 hour to get back to the dock after you catch the fish. And as soon as you do catch it, you're going to upload the picture, so we know you're coming.
Dave, man, this sounds like a wild time, but for 10 grand, even I can do that.
Yeah, well, you better. Yeah, I'm sure you got that big radio station, man. They ought to put the Tom P team together.
Hold on.
I don't know who would fish with you. Yeah, they are teams of three.
Hold on a second, Dave. Hold on a second. Yeah, what? Hold on. Hey, Shoal, somebody just passed me a note. When is Shoal not catching stripers? even the interns love you, Shoal. Okay, Dave, for more information, give that site, please.
Okay. Well, it's just the Battle of the Back Bay .com. I got links from my Absecon Bay Sportsman Center Facebook page. There's links all over the place. just give me a call at the shop, 609-484-0409. We'll point you in the right direction. Like I said, we got almost 2 weeks before. Well, it's already Saturday, yeah. So we only got a week from here.
Dave, how much? What's the entry fee?
Entry fee now is $650, but out of the maximum is 30 boats. So you're gonna have a one chance out of 10 at a minimum of getting your money back.
That's it. That's the dealio. Is there, people? Dave, hopefully we'll see you next week, man. In between the pheasant hunting, we'll catch you.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see. Yeah. That starts now. I don't miss it at all. I'm catching these straight guys.
Take care, Joel.
I got a few holes open. If somebody needs a trip, give me a call.
Hey, listen, is Sugar still the mascot?
Oh yeah, she'll be at the Legion. I hope on next Saturday.
Okay, Dave, we'll see, man. That is a big money event, first of its kind. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Get out and enjoy. Next week, next Saturday, Pheasant Quail, everything's happening. Everything's happening in October and November. It is just a great time. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio.